Welcome to the Cognizant Leadership and Innovation Podcast, a podcast for leaders and by leaders, where they share their secret sauce to success with technology, culture, and people. So hold on, because another great episode starts right now. Welcome to the Cognizant Leadership and Innovation Podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Anglero, Cognizant's Nordic CTO and Innovation Officer. Welcome to another exciting episode and another exciting guest. This time, I went deep into the forest of Norway to find this guest. You know, there's famous people walking all over the woods of Norway, and I found one, a friend of mine. We've known each other for, I guess I'm going to challenge him to see if he remembers when we actually met. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome to the Cognizant Leadership and Innovation Podcast, Jan Grønbech. He is the Chief Business Officer at D Company, and his claim to fame is, I think, I'm even proud to even say the following. His claim to fame, he is the founder of Google in Norway. Ladies and gentlemen, Jan Grønbech. Good morning, Jan. Hello, Jan. How are you?
Good morning, Thomas. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. How's that for an intro?
Awesome. Thank you very much. I'm flattered.
Take that and make it a ringtone. That'll feed your ego for the rest of your life. Jan, welcome to the podcast. And there's a lot of things to discuss with you. Before we get into what's going on with you now and all the amazing stuff you're involved in, let's just jump straight into the big question. Your intro, your title, founder of Google in Norway. Now, I really want to cut off half that sentence to say the founder of Google.
That would be fun.
That would be fun. You wouldn't be talking to you now. But founder of Google in Norway. Wow. How did that happen?
Well, 20 years ago, I worked for a company called DoubleClick. And this was back in the dot-com era. And some of my colleagues in Germany and the UK started working for this tiny company called Google, which was a search engine. This was the time when we had like 8 search engines, I think, and Google was not the biggest by far. But I remember I was using Google because every time I was trying to hire someone, I would Google them. And you couldn't really Alta Vista anyone. It didn't really work. So I told my friends that when you're ready to start a Norwegian office, give me a call. And they said, yeah, Norway is number 17 on the list. I'm like, what? And they said, no, Norway is the 17th most important digital economy in the Western world. I'm like, okay.
What year was this?
2002.
2002, Norway is number 17. That's digital economy. Interesting. Keep going, please, John.
Yeah, I think we still are the 17th most important economy. So you know, Google was a very data-driven company, and they still are. So they called me a couple of years later and said, "Could you start Denmark and then Norway?" And I'm like, "Yep, I'm ready." So I started Google Denmark in May 2005, and in October the same year, when I set up the office down there and hired the people, then I started Google in Norway.
You know, I think what you're saying now is great, and the way you're saying it is great, because you make starting a company sound so easy. That's number one. And then number two, you make it sound like being at the right place at the right time. Also incredibly easy, because a lot of people, let's be honest, 99.99% of the people on the planet Earth would love to be, say, they're the Google founder of Google, whatever, in whatever country. You know what I mean? Did you know back then that you would actually be, you were in the middle of like most powerful company in the world, or influential, let's say influential?
I had no idea. It's just a long string of coincidences, all of this. It goes all the way back to Aftenposten. When I was there, I was a sales manager for the newspaper subscription department. And somebody asked if there were any volunteers to make the first online newspaper for Aftenposten back in 96. And I was the only volunteer. And, you know, that got the ball rolling. That got me into DoubleClick eventually. And that got me into Google. But I remember sitting with a friend of mine who's a very well-known investor in 2004. And we're looking at the Google IPO and thinking about buying shares in Google for $83. And we're both like, this is ridiculous. It's completely overpriced. It makes no sense whatsoever. And, you know, if you take out the stock splits, the price went up to $5,400, right? Mm-hmm. So little did I know. But what I did know was that day in May 2005, I was almost about to give up to get that Google job. And there was another American company trying to get me to work for them. And this was already a big company in Norway. I was offered, you know, a decent salary, a company car. I was supposed to have 90 employees. And just then Google made an offer. And it was half of the other one.
Wow.
And I walked home. I came home to my wife and I said, I have two offers. Is one company is, you know, going to pay me this much money and to give me a Mercedes and a nice corner office and 90 employees. And this other one is Google. I'm going to start this at home and I'm going to be the only employee and I'm actually going to make not much more than, you know, a nurse, basically. And she's like, well, that's an easy choice. You know, you have to take the good offer.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't, because when I got the offer from Google, I got goosebumps. I don't know why, but I think something is good with this company. Uh-huh. And so I went for the goosebumps, and it turned out to work out.
I went for the goosebumps. That is an excellent name of a book. If you ever write your autobiography?
it's not my cup of tea.
I think that's an inspiring story, Jan. Seriously. Your whole story is inspiring as hell. You know, not many people want to make that choice or that decision and follow your gut. I'm very impressive. And now, Jan, today you're with D Company. You're the chief business officer at D Company. So what inspired you to go from being the founder of Google Norway? And you were there for how long? 15 years?
Yeah, I was there for almost 15 years. When I left, I was the longest serving country manager in the world. I probably saw about 50 of my colleagues leaving for different reasons. And you know, keep in mind, I joined Google when there were 2,000 employees and their revenue was counted in millions. And when I left, we were 220,000. And I guess they had about 300 billion in revenue. So it was a totally different company. Still an amazing company. I still believe it's, you know, the coolest company on the planet. But let's just say that it was time to go. And I'm 55. I want to have a couple of more gigs before I go fishing. And it was sort of now or never. And even though it was, you know, I was pinching myself every day for 15 years, this just made sense. And I was lucky enough to leave just basically a few weeks before Corona started. And so I don't think necessarily the 2 years under lockdown were the two best years to be a Google employee, because everybody worked from home. And some of the magic at Google is meeting your amazing colleagues and, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid and having that great food and all that. And so that was pretty good. Then I invested in a bunch of startups, took some board positions, consulted a little bit. And I knew that one day there's going to be an investment opportunity that is so cool that I have to join it. And that's D Company. And so it's a company that's founded by an attorney who wanted to be the first one to digitize and automate some of the more boring parts of being a lawyer, which is like corporate law, anything from doing calling a board meeting, general assembly, changing the bylaws, having the shareholder registry, all this.
Normal.
Now it's totally automated. And so basically we're going to change that part of the legal industry, and we're on good way to do that.
You know, Jan, you make it being a leader sound so simple, you know, but I'm sure, you know, the listeners to this podcast are other leaders, and they are like me right now, just are without words because your story is so powerful. And the fact that you followed your gut all the time, you're always listening to your gut. I need to keep digging into this. How do you learn to listen to your gut when you have so much pressure around you as a leader, as a father, mm-hmm. as a husband, you know, but yet you've done it so well throughout your life?
How? Well, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jan. That's what friends are for. But how or when or what is, yeah, please enlighten me. I don't even know how to put words to it, but if you could put words to it, you would help all of us struggling husbands, bosses, leaders.
I have to go all the way back to 1988. I actually got a coach when I was 21.
Sports coach and, or a mental coach?
No, a business coach, okay. Or like a personal coach.
Okay.
And she is still my coach.
Wow.
And honestly, you know, having a good coach is not somebody who tells you what to do, but it's somebody who asks the right questions and who will basically, you know, enable yourself to make the right decisions. And she was the one who, you know, made it possible for me to feel the goosebumps when I saw that first Google business card. So, you know, she helped me pick my education. She helped me pick schools, but not by telling me, but by asking questions. And she helped me, pick jobs. And if I feel like I'm, you know, unmotivated and maybe like, you know, starting to look for something else, I go and have a talk with her, and I leave that office super focused, super motivated. And hopefully I bring some of that focus and motivation back to my team. So she's been super helpful for me this whole way. And I think everybody should have a coach. I know, you know, all CEOs have coaches, right? But I think students should have it. It could be in the form of a mentor, but a mentor who knows what he or she is doing. But for me, it's been super important.
Has she been your only coach? What I mean by that is, have you had any bad coaches? And then how did you know she was the one?
Well, you know, I didn't hire her as a coach in 88, but she gave me some advice. I met her by accident when I was in a situation of choosing my education. And what she told me made so much sense that I came back to her for more advice in the future. Then it was only like in the 90s that she actually went to California and got her coaching certification or her master's in this, and started coaching full time, and that's when I became like a paying customer of hers. So in the beginning it was more informal, and then it became very formalized. And I've sent dozens of people to her that all are super happy about that. Because we you can't be a CEO or run a company on your own. It's extremely lonely, and you need guidance, you need help, you need to just know that you're doing the right thing, right? So you need somebody to talk to, because there's no one else to talk to. And I think that's been crucial.
You're really deep into the middle of it now, because, you know, I've coached and I'm coaching CEOs now, and they are embarrassed if anyone finds out that they don't know everything, right? That that they are insecure quite often throughout during the day, but yet everybody looks up to them. They don't want to ruin that image. The mental war you have inside your head as a CEO is huge, but they don't want anybody to know it. I think what you're talking about, you're talking publicly about stuff that other CEOs don't want anybody to know. Yet you're saying that people, we all need that type of attention. We all need that love. We all need that help. What, when you're with your coach, you said she doesn't tell you what to do, but she asks you the right questions. Can you just give an example so that you could, so people could, people like me could frame it? Like, what kind of questions does she guide you? Does she, what does she do? What does she say? Does her tone different? What does a great coach sound like?
Well, in this particular case, she also taught me to meditate 30 years ago. She's the teacher of transcendental meditation, which is, that's a, you know, topic for another podcast, but it's also important. So when I walk into her office, I get a nice cup of Vata tea, which is an Ayurvedic tea, which calms you down and, you know, gives you a lot of comfort, plus it tastes good. And we might chit chat a little bit about family or whatever, because we, of course, we become friends over the years. And I usually go to her with a specific topic. So let's say, you know, oh, I'm thinking about changing my career, you know, or I'm tired of my job. I need to find some energy or motivation to continue, or then or otherwise I have to change, right? Yeah. And her questions might be, you know, they're not yes and no questions, obviously, but they're, you know, there's like, okay, so what about the job, you know? Or she might say, okay, if you were to describe on a scale from 1 to 10, what is your situation like now? Like, it's maybe a 5. Okay, why is it a 5? And you have to sort of go into in depth there and say, okay, what would be satisfactory on a scale to 1 to 10 being, you know, 10 being non-achievable, sort of, you know, I wish it was a 7, you know, then I'd be quite happy. Okay, what would a 7 look like for you? Yeah, it would be like this and that. It's like, okay, now, what would you be willing to do to get to that 7? You know, to do that, I might need to, you know, study this or that, or, you know, learn that skill, or change my management or leadership style, or maybe I need to reorganize my management team. You know, it's like, okay, are you comfortable doing that? Like, one thing is being like knowing what you maybe should do, but are you willing to do that? Mm-hmm. And are you able to do that? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what would be the consequences of doing that, and so on. And so basically it's just, you know, making me more conscious of where I am, where I want to go, how I could possibly get there, and am I willing and able to get there? Do I have the tools to get there? And this, you know, for me and for a lot of people makes a lot of sense. But if she was telling me what to do, you know, it would be a totally different story. Then she would be running the company. That'd be wrong, right? So,
the questions you ask, the examples you give, is it powerful because it's an external person exposing your inner insecurities, where intellectually you know some of these answers, but because it's an external person that you trust, that's what makes the difference?
Yeah, I think a good coach doesn't necessarily need to know the ins and outs of your business or the technology that you're, you know, trying to create or whatever, but it needs to be someone – who has a certain business acumen and who has been in a leadership position herself and knows how lonely it can be and the challenges that that you face as a leader. But apart from that, it's knowing the details of your business is not that necessary. And so I try to copy her style when I coach my team, because part of being a leader, or the most important part of being a leader, is to be a coach, and you should do it every single day.
The most important part of being a leader is being a coach. Another great title for your next book, Jan. So now you've written two books on this podcast. But I just want to dig into that. How hard is it to be a leader? How hard is it to be a coach when you have all that pressure as a CEO, as a leader, all those people looking up to you, all your inner insecurities, and now you have to also lead other people?
As I said, I think the biggest part of being a leader is to be a good coach, which again means that the greatest satisfaction that I can have anyway in my roles would be to see people who work for me grow as professionals, as individuals, and grow in terms of their performance, and if coaching them brings them closer to that goal, then it's a very strong and significant feeling of accomplishment. I think in our technological world today, we talked about before, today is the most complex and most difficult day that any CEO will ever experience in their life.
Why?
Having said that, today is also the simplest and least complex day they will experience for as long as they live. And this has to do with the rate of technological innovation. Mm-hmm. All the things that they have to know in order to make the right decisions going forward. Mm-hmm. Is this the time to invest in AI? Is machine learning going to be crucial for our business? Mm-hmm. If you don't even know what machine learning is, you have a serious problem. Right. So I think it's fair to say today that being a leader is a more humbling experience than it used to be. Because in the old days, it was likely that the CEO was actually the person who knew the product best, who knew the industry best and the environment and the competition and where this was heading. Today, that's not necessarily the case. I would see that in Google all the time. I would have dozens of employees who knew their area of expertise like 10 times better than I did. Mm-hmm. And so I would have to just try to build the best team that I could of experts and rely on them doing the right thing, and then help them by, again, being a coach and, asking them simple questions like, this went really great. I think you did this really well. Is there one thing that you would have done different that would have made an even better outcome? What do you think that was? And then you talk about that a little bit and you say, okay, should we go down that path next time and see if that works, and then trying to grow the organization that way. But you have to be humble enough to realize that you are no longer, the company number one expert in every single field. Mm. The only thing you can be maybe the biggest expert in is leadership and coaching and removing roadblocks.
Wow. Go, Jan. You are killing it today. Wow.
Well, I have a good coach in you, asking the right questions.
So much credibility comes from being the founder of Google Norway, and you're sharing all this. Well, you're sharing a lifelong list of reflections and lessons learned, and that's very valuable for everybody out there. And we've been talking about the past, so let me ask you a question going forward. Because your track record is damn good in predicting and seeing things going forward. As a leader, the next few years, right now, today, we are in October of 2022. The Ukraine war, Russian-Ukraine war, has been going on for over a year. We have crises in Taiwan. We have, supposedly, the markets are about to crash. We have food prices escalating. The world is just a mess. It's always a mess, but there seems to be a little bit more of a mess. And we came out of COVID, and it doesn't feel like we came out of anything, okay? And the ramifications of the lockdown and mental illness is at an all-time high. With all that said, and with all your experience as a leader, having been coached by, sounds like, one of the best coaches out there, what do you see? What are you excited about the next 1, 2 years, 3 years? You go further than that, but after that, it gets too far ahead, I think. But where does that gut tell you that, God, I just can't wait to jump out of bed in the morning?
Yeah. You know, I think what's unique about the time right now, you probably read Black Swan, right? And it's like right now, I feel like we're, you know, we just had like 3 Black Swan moments, you know, that we didn't think could possibly happen, right? We had maybe 5, you know, it's like first Corona 2 years ago, and then obviously the terrible invasion of Ukraine. Now the energy crisis and lots of other conflicts around the world. It's a little bit scary, right?
And individual black swans that people have had in their life that they didn't see coming. So we're just talking about things we all share, but a lot of people have gone through their own individual challenges, right? So I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just want to put it in context for everybody out there. Everybody's going through their own hell. Please continue. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, I know, but that's a very good point. I mean, and I think we're going to see, unfortunately, we're going to see a lot of people losing their jobs. We're going to see a lot of small companies not being able to secure the next round of funding, probably. So that's going to be troublesome. I wouldn't call it a blessing, but I have a handicapped child, and so for 25 years, my life has been a little bit different than many parents. That said, most families have some problem, but it might not always be visible. But the thing is, when you have a challenge like that, and you have to take care of someone with very special needs, it sort of also puts everything into perspective. So, and I think in a time of crisis like this, we can't lose our heads because we, you know, might lose our job or the interest rate might go up, because these are things that will pass. Things will be better, and we have to focus on, you know, what's important in life, right? And so that's one thing. And there is so much to look forward to. I think the technical innovation when it comes to, you know, health, when it comes to, travel, the way we work, especially, you know, and we talked about artificial intelligence and machine learning and all these things, it's going to be exponential. Mm. And it's going to be super, super exciting. So, you know, never waste a good crisis, right? So, I mean, if you get laid off today because your company isn't able to pay your salary anymore, maybe this is the best time to start a new company. Exactly. And to start changing the world and your career.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, the great immortal words from Jan Grunberg. This is fantastic. Jan, I think there's no way. That's the best end to any podcast I've recorded. This is fantastic. Listen, any last words you'd like to share with us? And you shared a lot of powerful words. You started 2 books. I mean, you've been amazing in the last 20, 30 minutes or so. But any last words you'd like to tell to all the leaders out there, all the CEOs who right now are having their ears pinned into their speakers going, please, Jan, share one more thing.
Oh, goodness. I think, honestly, if you don't have a coach, get one. And if you are like me somebody in, you know, in their 50s or even 60s, I would also recommend maybe to get a mentor who is in their 20s. I learned so much from people who grew up not knowing a world without the internet. And I think, you know, if we are going to secure our company for the future, I think we need to actually consult with the people who are the future. And so I have a young mentor, he's like 26, 27. That also gives me a lot because he brings insights and you know, aspirations and ambitions to the table that I haven't even thought about. So so I think that's my two cents at the end here.
Two cents is like the Google stock. It's worth more and more over time. Ladies and gentlemen, Jan Grønbæk, friend, founder of Google Norway, chief business officer, D Company, and a visionary and an extremely wise man. Jan, thank you so much for being on the Cognizant Leadership and Innovation Podcast.
Thank you, Thomas. It's been a pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, subscribe to the podcast. We're on Spotify. We're on Google Play. We're everywhere. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, take care of yourself. And as Jan said, have a great coach. Have a great mentor. And you'll have a great life. Take care. Until next time. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Cognizant Leadership and Innovation Podcast. At Cognizant, we help our clients modernize technology, reimagine processes, and transform experiences so they can stay ahead in our fast-changing world. Together, we're improving everyday life. Subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, iTunes, and everywhere.